You're listening to At Any Rate, JP Morgan's Global Research Podcast, where we take a look at the story behind some of the biggest trends and themes in fixed income, currency, and commodity markets today. I'm your host, Teresa Ho, head of US Short Duration Strategy. Today, I want to focus on a topic that touches probably every single person that lives in the US, taxes. Unfortunately, I was not one of those people that got a tax refund this year, but on the bright side, I was quite pleased to see that this April tax season did not result in a repeat of September 2019, or even anything close to what we saw last November month end and December year end in the funding markets. In fact, the impact on the front end was quite muted. It was barely a blip. SOFR backed up by 1 basis point to 532, same with TGCR as it increased by 1 basis point to 531. The Fed funds rate actually held steady at 533. And even when we looked at volumes, overnight funding volumes did not meaningfully increase, giving no indications of substantial increased liquidity needs. And mind you, we also had nearly $120 billion of Treasury coupons that settled on Monday. So the lack of any upward movement in funding rates was definitely a pleasant surprise. And so to help me unpack and break down what we saw this past week as it relates to the April tax season and the funding markets, I'm joined by my colleague and boss, Jay Barry, co-head of U.S. Rate Strategy and U.S. Government Bond Strategist at JP Morgan. Thanks for being here, Jay.
Teresa, pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me today.
So you and I actually discussed this very topic 2 weeks ago. We all knew that tax day was coming, and you had talked about how this tax season was likely going to be another strong one, similar to what we saw in 2022, reasons being that the labor markets remained tight for all of last year, and that we had the strongest asset performance since 2020 in a 60-40 portfolio, which would suggest that capital gains receipts were likely to rebound sharply. We're now sitting here on Friday, 4 days post the tax day on Monday. Can you give us a sense of how this tax season is playing out so far?
Yeah, no, sure, I'd be happy to. And I think in aggregate, Teresa, at the beginning of this week, it seemed like receipts were actually tracking somewhat closer in line with 2023 than 2022. And again, as you just said, that was a bit of a surprise in the context of the tightness of labor markets last year. And again, the strong asset performance we had as well. But it's notable that receipts have caught up a bit in recent days. And now we're tracking about 15% above last year's pace. And I'll note that we're recording this in mid-afternoon before Thursday's data have come out. So we are still lacking the Thursday tax day data. But that would still leave us, you know, significantly below the bumper crop in tax receipts in 2022. And I think there's a few things to unpack here when I'm thinking about trends in tax receipts, because I think historically, some have said we can still observe the vestiges of tax receipts coming in kind of later in April. So it may be too early to make a pronouncement on where we stand, but there's a few things that we've noticed. One is that, and we've talked about this in our piece last week, is that there's an increased trend for taxpayers to file electronically, which means that their bank accounts and those payments are being debited on the day of the tax filing deadline or shortly thereafter. So that really means with an increased share of electronic filings, you get a good sense of what's happening with tax receipts within just a couple of days of the deadline itself. And now this year, there was a complicating factor where I think for those of us, or those of you, Teresa, who sit in the great Commonwealth of Massachusetts and celebrate Patriots Day alongside your compatriots in Maine, that delayed the payment date into Wednesday because there was a compounded federal holiday for workers in DC on Tuesday as well. So that delayed some of the payments, but nonetheless, this is where we stand. And then the second piece of the puzzle is that over the last couple of years, the IRS has become much more efficient at processing traditional returns, meaning that paper filings and those checks are getting processed and deposited earlier as well. Thus, it's typically, we think, normal to see about 80% of total tax receipts for the season within a week of the filing deadline. And now the data we have is about 3 days through. So it seems where we stand right now is that about 70% of receipts are in, and we're tracking again stronger than last year, but not as strong as 2022. But this probably in aggregate leaves us tracking pretty close to our forecasted $1.51 trillion deficit for fiscal year 24.
Got it. So our expectations really weren't that far off. And not surprisingly, I think in conjunction with all the tax receipts Treasury has been getting, balances at the TGA have also gone up, increasing by about $250 billion to $930 billion over the past week. Also not too similar from what we saw in 2022, which I guess leads me to my next question, Jay. You know, you and your team frequently make projections on that treasury bill issuance. I know even before the tax day came about, you had already made some changes to your T-bill forecast. Can you talk to us about that? Given what you know now about the tax flows that we saw this past week, has this changed anything in any way?
Yeah, sure. I would just say from a high level perspective, to the extent that I think tax season delivered something that wasn't terribly different from we expected coming in, Teresa, that T-bill issuance has been more or less tracking in line with the forecast that we made, you know, a month or so ago. So just for context for you and for our listeners, since the peak in outstandings in late March, we've seen about $154 billion in paydowns in the bill market over the last three plus weeks. Now, going forward, you know, as you mentioned it, the TGA as of yesterday afternoon was sitting about $929 billion. In order to kind of have that normalized back over the course of the next few weeks, we have forecast an additional $116 billion in paydowns over that period. So we envision bill supply remaining negative until about the second week in May. And overall, we have forecasts negative $166 billion in net issuance for the second quarter of the year. So we are through a reasonable amount of that thus far. But even once we get through tax season and bill issuance turns slightly positive in May, again, there's going to be a secondary dip in outstandings and an increase in paydowns as we get closer to the June corporate tax date. And in broad context, looking at all the increases that we've seen in Treasury coupon auction sizes from last August until now, we really only envision really flat net T-bill issuance in the third quarter of the year before it starts to swing up in 4Q24 all over again. So that's kind of the story on T-bill issuance. But it's notable to me, just away from the issuance side and briefly just thinking about demand, that despite the negative net issuance and what has been really strong demand for bills for the last 9 or 10 months, that, you know, what we noticed in the latest primary dealer release, which came out yesterday afternoon, is that primary dealer inventories and T-bills surged, and they rose to new record highs of about $119 billion. So from a fascinating perspective, that's about a doubling from where we were before the period of negative net T-bill issuance that we've seen. So even with these paydowns, it seems like dealers are finding themselves with more bills on their balance sheet. I think you and I have kind of spent a little bit of time talking about this and find some reason that it could be related to the tax date itself. But it would really seem that this negative bill issuance period has come at a pretty appropriate time overall.
Got it. So in essence, if I'm hearing you correctly, strong tax receipts should in general result in less overall treasury funding needs, which means less T-bill issuance, at least in the near term.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, you know, we saw a surge of about $2 trillion in net issuance from the beginning of June last year until late March. So this is a pretty stark contrast to everything we've been used to over the last 9 to 10 months or so.
So maybe just one follow-up question on the TGA. I know we are pretty still far off from year end, but market participants are already starting to talk about the debt ceiling. December 31st is when the current suspension of the U.S. debt ceiling ends. In previous episodes, Treasury will reduce its TGA to a lower level that was hit during the previous confrontation, which resulted in a significant reduction in net T-bill issuance. However, I know in your TGA forecast, you're anticipating balances there to stay around current levels and end the year at around $800 billion, which implies no shrinkage in the TGA and accordingly, no reduction in T-bill supply. Can you talk to us about that?
Didn't we just finish talking about the debt ceiling, Teresa? Can't we just take a break for a little bit longer? It feels like it was just yesterday that we dealt with the end of the suspension and that drama last spring. But yeah, I mean, I'm happy to talk about it. And again, it's incredible that you're considering this when, as you mentioned, the end of the suspension is still about 8 months away or so. But it does have massive implications for money markets. And I think my own take is that when we saw the legislation that was passed last year, there was a clause in that legislation that effectively read that the Treasury Secretary, and I'm reading this now, shall not issue obligations during the suspension period for the purpose of increasing the cash balance above normal operating balances. So I think that was an interesting insertion right there. And we know that really for the last 9 years or so, that the Treasury has had a policy to maintain enough cash to withstand 1 week of outflows from the TGA. And the language inserted in that legislation to me would seem to indicate that Congress is limiting Treasury from raising cash over and above the amount it holds to address these operational risks that it has identified, which would be loss of access to capital markets. And to an extent, I think we've actually been vindicated in that view very recently, as the Department of Justice Office of Legal Counsel late last week quietly released its legal opinion around the 2021 debt ceiling debate and around the cash balance from that time. And it's interesting that in the memo, Justice argued that in previous debt ceiling debates, the fact that Treasury had actively drawn down its cash balance, that was not based off of a legal interpretation, but instead an informal view that a higher TGA could be construed to indicate that the Treasury had issued more debt than was necessary to fund commitments and payments. So to me, the timing of the release is very interesting, and quiet as it may be, it does seem that it gives the Treasury more flexibility to maintain a cash balance in line with this self-imposed limit that, or self-imposed, call it liquidity buffer that it sort of instated about 9 years ago. So just to consider this and looking at this legal opinion, in July of 2021, when it was written, there were only about $4.1 trillion in T-bills outstanding versus close to $5.9 trillion right now. And the T-bill share of debt was 19% versus about 22.5% as we speak. And in that sort of legal opinion, Treasury and DOJ talked about the amount of cash it could hold being somewhere in the vicinity of $465 billion. And when we gross up that notional by the growth of the bill market over the last three-ish years, but also acknowledging that the duration of the bill market has shortened with the leaning very heavily on shorter dated bills, we think that 1 week outflow number is much closer to $750 billion right now. So accordingly, I think there's going to be very limited scope for the TGA to plummet and decline drastically, as we've seen in the periods prior to the other ends of debt ceiling suspensions. And that would be a pretty stark contrast from what we observed in the past. Although I will admit, and you talked about that $800 billion number, it may suggest that there's a tiny bit of downside risk to that $800 billion target for year-end 24. But we're talking about in the order of maybe $50 billion, not hundreds of billions right there.
Got it. That's really helpful, Jay. And thanks for clarifying that, because I think there was definitely confusion out there across certain market participants. And you know what you just talked about is probably a good segue into what's going on in the money markets, because everything you just talked about has implications for the front end, particularly you know as we think about the composition of the Fed's liabilities outside of the TGA. You know, certainly with less T-bill issuance, that likely means balances at the overnight RRP will likely remain elevated around current levels. As we've seen over the past year, you know, there is a pretty strong inverse relationship between T-bill outstandings and RRP balances, as money funds view these two asset classes as pretty close substitutes. And notwithstanding the decline that we saw on Monday, which has largely been a function of money funds drawing down their liquidity at the RRP to fund corporate individual tax payments, you know, for the most part, balances of the overnight RRP has moved sideways recently, registering somewhere around $400 billion as T-bill issuance has slowed and turned negative. So, you know, really absent a material pickup in T-bill issuance and with money fund AUMs hovering above $6 trillion, it's really hard to see how the RRP facility will get to zero anytime soon.
You know, that's really interesting, Teresa. Because I think there's a view out there, and maybe it's a little bit misinformed, but nonetheless, that the rapid decline in RRP was going to continue apace to what we've seen really since June of last year. But given what you've just said, that doesn't seem to be really likely. And secondarily, that with RRP sitting below $500 billion, it would be suggestive that there's not a whole lot of excess liquidity left in the system, and that we're kind of at the risk of things moving from abundant and perhaps merely ample. Do you believe in that? Or you agree with that, I should say?
No, not quite. I think if anything, what we learned from this past week is that there is still sufficient liquidity in the system, as reflected in the stability of the money markets this past week. You know, benchmark rates barely moved. Funding facilities such as the standing repo facility were barely used, and neither really was a discount window. Usage there kind of picked up a mere about $5.5 billion to outstandings of around eight. So not a significant amount of usage. And, you know, as you probably know, when there are large liquidity drains, such as the one we saw this past week, we typically see upward pressure on SOFR and Fed funds. And the fact that we didn't, you know, does suggest that there is still adequate liquidity in aggregate across the system. So said another way, I don't think we're coming close to the lowest comfortable level of reserves. And the most recent H4 report that came out shows reserves falling by about $300 billion week over week to $3.3 trillion as of close of business Wednesday. So while we still don't know exactly where is the lowest point of reserves, we certainly know now that it's somewhere below $3.3 trillion.
That's a great point, Teresa. And if I can just sort of follow up on what you just said, given what you know now, what do you think the implications are for QT?
It's really interesting that you asked that, Jay, because the New York Fed actually just came out with its annual report on open market operations in 2023 this past Wednesday. And in the report, the Fed gives us two scenarios, a high reserves scenario and a lower reserve scenario in terms of, you know, how far QT might go. And in both scenarios, assuming a taper in the first half of this year, you know, they're projecting that QT will stop in 2025. In particular, in the first higher reserve scenario, QT will stop in early 2025 when reserves reach about 11% of nominal GDP, or about $3.1 trillion based on today's nominal GDP number. And in the second lower reserve scenario, QT will stop in mid-2025 when reserves reach about 10% of nominal GDP, or $2.8 trillion. Either way, this is consistent with how we've been thinking about the Fed's balance sheet and QT, and that, you know, we do think QT can continue through the end of the year. And what we saw this past week confirms that. Not to say that we won't see any funding pressures as we get closer to the lowest comfortable level of reserves, but we do have a Fed that's going to be tapering QT soon. We have the standing repo facility that is in place, and there's still a positive balance at the RRP. So everything suggests that even if repo rates do back up, it's going to be contained. Well, with that, let me end it here. I think we covered a lot today, Jay. Thank you very much for joining, and thank you everyone for listening. This communication is provided for information purposes only. Please read JP Morgan research reports related to its contents for more information, including important disclosures. Copyright 2024, JP Morgan Chase & Co., all rights reserved. This episode was recorded on April 19th, 2024.